This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. A tale of technologies this hour. The power to entice, manipulate, and dazzle with technology for good or ill. We will see how the wonder of seeing a living fetus on an ultrasound image may have the power to change prenatal health care for millions in Central Africa. Does Apple care about the love of its consumers in the launch of the new iPhone? We'll find out. Also, the temptation to use information to bring down someone powerful. Do we call that journalism or narcissism? But first, is the U.S. government missing the technological urgency of needing to better understand the Zika virus? New Zika cases are being reported in Florida. Puerto Rico has recorded around 8,700 cases. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is running out of money to slow the outbreaks. Congress initially gave the CDC $220 million to fight the virus, but as of last week, the CDC had spent $194 million of that on things like research and mosquito eradication. The disease continues to spread. The Senate was scheduled to vote on a $1.1 billion funding package last night, but Democrats blocked the bill for excluding Planned Parenthood from funding for contraception. It was one of the amendments. Zika is sexually transmitted in addition to being spread by mosquitoes. Dr. Thomas Frieden is the director of the CDC. He says a big problem is that scientists still aren't sure exactly how Zika works.
We're literally learning more about Zika every day. There's a lot we don't know, and some of the most important things are, first, what's going to happen to the infants born to mothers infected with Zika who don't have microcephaly? Will they have neurological problems or not? Will they be severe? When will they become apparent? How common will they be? What are the risk factors for them? That's one whole set of questions. A second really important set of questions is how can we better diagnose Zika? Currently, it's very hard to distinguish antibodies to Zika from antibodies to dengue, and we have no way of distinguishing or determining if someone was infected with Zika in the remote past, more than 3 months ago. And then finally, we need much better ways to control the mosquitoes that spread Zika.
And on the case of birth defects, is there any understanding of how the Zika virus, what the mechanism is for producing microcephaly or any other abnormality in an infant?
Unfortunately, we are learning more about the devastating impacts of Zika on the developing brain. Zika is a virus that's what's called neurotropic, which means it grows in or targets brain cells. And from mid-January, when we saw the first specimens from Brazil, we were simply horrified to see the devastation that it causes with the Zika virus actually growing in, replicating, and destroying the fetal brain, especially late first and early second trimester, but potentially through the whole pregnancy.
So Zika might as well be renamed, fetal brain killer. I mean, that's really its ideal environment based on the research, the initial research that you have.
It's a horrific entity and really devastating for infants, mothers, families. I remember a pregnant woman I spoke with in Puerto Rico who said she was so concerned about her child, her pregnancy. She said, if my child is born with Zika, the rest of my life I'll have to be caring for him. And when I die, I'll be worried who will care for him.
So all of this just makes even more outrageous the decision of Congress to leave for summer recess without approving the funding to address Zika virus. And the funding that you have is almost spent at this point.
The money is out the door already, and there are things that we wish we could do that we can't do because we don't have the resources. The decisions that are taken today and over the coming weeks, or the lack of decisions that are made in Washington, will have implications for decades to come for families.
Have you ever seen a situation where a medical question of such urgency is caught in this political battle? I suppose AIDS, to a certain extent, was caught in a similar kind of battle, but this just is much more difficult to explain.
The long delay in providing additional supplemental funding really makes it difficult to have a robust response to the epidemic, and it also makes clear why it's so important that there's something like an infectious disease rapid response fund, where we would have the ability to respond immediately and rapidly with triggers that are agreed to by Congress and reporting that's agreed to by Congress and authorization or authorities that are able to be implemented so that we can actually spend money quickly and effectively. And I'm encouraged that both the House and Senate, both Democrats and Republicans, are on board with the idea of creating something like an infectious disease rapid response fund.
So what do you think the likelihood of an endowment like this would be? And what do you need early, at the earliest opportunity, to make progress on the research that needs to happen on Zika right now?
With Zika, we really need Congress to act in September. We need funds to be able to support state and local entities, to support families and women, to learn more about Zika so we can confront it more effectively, and to do an even better job of diagnosing Zika and of preventing it and controlling mosquitoes. For the Rapid Response Fund, we need both the dollars but also the legal authorities so that when there is an emergency, we can treat it appropriately as an emergency. One of the things about public health is that it's a best buy. If we get in early, we can avoid problems. If you're responding to an earthquake or a flood, you're picking up pieces, you're providing assistance to communities. But with an epidemic, if you get there soon enough, you can do the equivalent of stopping an earthquake.
With Zika, there's so much about it that I don't understand, and that even reading every day about it as I do, it's hard to compare it to anything that I've seen in my lifetime, German measles, et cetera. What is your worst-case scenario if Congress doesn't act? I mean, where could we be in the next year or two if really nothing is done to control what seems to be very different kinds of variables?
Zika is unprecedented, and unfortunately, it's likely to be around for years to come. That's why it's so important that we invest now in better ways to find it, better ways to stop it, better ways to prevent it. And that means we will need additional dollars, and the sooner we get them, the sooner we can embark on those really important projects.
Dr. Thomas Frieden is director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank you, John.
Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick joins me now on Capitol Hill. Todd, is this about defunding of Planned Parenthood? Is it about the election in November, or is it more of a hostage situation for the Zika research funding?
It's part of it is about Planned Parenthood, although we should point out, John, that it's not Planned Parenthood directly that has become controversial. This is part of the muddling that goes on, especially in election years when politicians want to have their ideological fights. There is language in the current Zika bill that Democrats hate that prevents money going to certain block grants that go to states, that go to family planning. The fact is that in many, many, many places, Planned Parenthood is the number one recipient of those block grants. So Planned Parenthood is not mentioned directly. They're not defunding Planned Parenthood. But the bottom line is that that's where the money flows. And that is where a large part of this fight has centered. The White House wanted $1.9 billion. Congress has basically settled on $1.1 billion for now. The Planned Parenthood block grant issue that you mentioned is a big deal. John, the long history of public health in Congress is a history of basically benign neglect, unless public health becomes a national security, you know, bioterrorism smallpox issue like it did after 9/11, or until there's an abject crisis like there is now. Marco Rubio is the senator from Florida. He's up for re-election himself. He wasn't running for re-election in the Senate. Now he is running for re-election in the Senate. His state is terribly affected, and he was on the floor yesterday.
Keep conspiring for political reasons in an election year to do nothing. My colleagues on both sides of the aisle and in both chambers, in the House and in the Senate, now face a choice. Are the political points you hope to gain from posturing on this funding really more valuable than saving the lives and protecting pregnant women, and preventing unborn children from being afflicted by this disease?
You know, that sounds like the language that was accompanied by the foot-dragging in the AIDS crisis back in the 1980s, when it took so long for Congress to get the political will to act.
Yeah, for very different reasons.
Sure.
Back in those days, which are unimaginable now, which might give some people some pause in this case, too. Rubio has a great deal of frustration there. There has been a lot of political posturing over this, over Planned Parenthood. There was language in an earlier version that still lingers in a weird way on the display of Confederate flags in veteran cemeteries, if you can believe it. That language was taken out of the conference report, but has trickled into the Veterans Administration in terms of policy now. now, and Democrats want it undone. It's really become a kind of a standoff. John, the bottom line of what really happened here is that the House and Senate went into a conference before the August recess in the middle of the summer. Republicans cut their own deal. They cut Democrats out of this deal. And the way this usually works, people in Congress will tell you, there's a Democratic president. You don't cut Democrats out of the deal. So when Republicans came out of the room and said, take it or leave it, White House said, leave it. We're not letting you do this to us. This is going to get solved now, John. They have to avoid a government shutdown and pass a big spending bill by September 30th. And that's where the Zika funding that the CDC officials like Dr. Frieden, who you just talked to, that's where their deal's finally going to get made. It's becoming increasingly clear that this $1.1 billion for Zika is probably going to be stripped of all these ideological touch points that we're talking about and folded into a much bigger deal. And that's probably the only way it can pass at this point, because nobody, especially Republicans, want to be on the hook for a government shutdown on the eve of an election. We've seen that movie before. So that appears where this is headed.
But why take the month of stalling at all in a situation like this, where this is an infectious disease? Is the state of Florida in the November election that important to put people at health risk?
I just think for most of the country, Zika is not a clear and present danger the way it is for Florida and Louisiana. And the desperation you might have heard in Marco Rubio's voice there, you know, somebody who voted for $1.9 billion, the White House version, is probably the only thing he's agreed on the White House, agreed with the White House on probably in a couple of years. And yes, he's up for re-election too. There are vulnerable members running for Senate in other places that do look like they want something to vote for, but they have not put enormous pressure on Republican leadership here to relent to Democrats' demands and pass a clean Zika funding bill. So maybe if you're from New Hampshire or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or Illinois, Zika is certainly a concern, but not the kind of concern it is if you're from Florida.
The Zika virus not going viral in the Congress, probably a month to wait for a resolution of that. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks so much.
You got it, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.